SBS Radio.
Brexit means Brexit.
Brexit is unumstossbar.
Rocket Man should have been handled a long time ago. He's fired!
Au nom du peuple français!
Wir schaffen das.
Make our planet great again.
Don't worry, be happy.
I will kill you if you destroy my country.
Better is always possible.
I ain't spending any time on it.
Hello, I'm Brett Mason in the gallery for SBS World News. This week...
Tax on under Labor, tax off under the Liberals, Mr. Speaker.
Wax on, wax off.
A big win for the Prime Minister and Treasurer, securing support in the Senate for the largest income tax cuts in the nation's history, just days after formally commencing free trade agreement negotiations with the European Union. In a moment, we'll speak exclusively with the EU Trade Commissioner, Cecilia Malmström, and Australia's Trade Minister, Steve Chobo. But first, here's political reporter Miles Morgan with his take on the week in Canberra.
Thanks, Brett. And this week we saw the government secure a huge win, probably Malcolm Turnbull's biggest since legalising same-sex marriage. If all goes to plan for the coalition, almost everyone is going to get a tax cut over the next 7 years, because the government passed its signature budget policy this week. A jubilant Malcolm Turnbull said it wasn't so much a win for him as it was for Australian families.
We believe in you. We believe in your aspirations. We want you to realise your dreams. We want you to keep more of the money you've earned. It's not the government's, it's yours. This personal income tax plan is for you.
In short, the government's $144 billion package is broken into three stages of tax cuts. They start from July for low and middle income earners, and they'll be getting back up to $530 at tax time next year. There's a really good explainer and a full breakdown on the SBS News website, sbs.com.au/news. But the road to the income tax cuts was littered with obstacles, a defiant opposition, and an unpredictable Pauline Hanson. She changed her support for the tax cuts several times over the last few weeks, but ended up siding with the government. Politically, though, she may lose more than she wins here. She claimed during the debate on the bill that, on her senator's salary, she wouldn't benefit from the tax cuts.
I'm a very, very fortunate Australian to be earning more than $200,000. I'm paying 45 cents in the dollar tax on that. I'm not getting tax relief. And to actually make that comment is misleading this Parliament.
But she ended up being accused of misleading Parliament because under the plan she voted for, someone on her salary will receive nearly $12,000 in tax cuts by 2024. Now, it may seem trivial, but remember, her party is contesting the Queensland seat of Longman in next month's by-election. So any bad publicity now, especially in those battlers' seats, could hurt her candidate's chances of winning there. Labor only supports the first stage of the income tax cuts and has vowed to repeal the latter two stages if it wins government. Bill Shorten went straight to Longman this week when Parliament wrapped up, and he says Labor's tax cuts are bigger and better, and you can't bank on the coalition's.
Fundamentally, these tax cuts in 7 years' time are a massive political joke. Can he guarantee that he knows what the economy will be like in 7 years' time? If this government has locked us into $140 billion... on the national credit card. It's not just that. Next week, Mr. Turnbull wants everyone to come to Canberra to vote for massive corporate tax cuts.
He does indeed. The government's bill to reduce Australia's company tax rate is its other major tax policy, and one it wants to pass before the next federal election. So we go to five by-elections in July, which will serve as a verdict on the government's tax cuts. And who knows, depending on the reaction, the government may use that momentum to go to an early federal election. And just briefly to foreign affairs, China's ambassador to Australia had some interesting words this week about relations between our two countries.
We need to see each other's development and policy intentions from a more positive perspective, with less Cold War mentality. We need to build more mutual trust, with less misunderstanding.
That's China's ambassador to Australia, Chang Jingye. It's a veiled reference to months, if not years, of media reports about China's influence on Australian politics and the strategic intent of its aid programs in the Pacific. And Brett, that was a big week in politics.
And so the deal to negotiate a deal has finally been done. Australia and the European Union are now formally negotiating the terms of what's expected to be the biggest ever free trade agreement in Australia's history. Trade Minister Steve Chobo telling me he won't sign a deal that doesn't give Australian farmers better access to the lucrative single market and more than half a billion consumers.
Ultimately, there will need to be a good quality deal at the core of this in order for us to reach agreement. If there's not, if we don't secure access and improved access to the marketplace, then that's obviously not going to be a good deal. And so I wouldn't conclude a deal like that.
I spent 2 days following the EU's Trade Commissioner on her first visit to Australia this week.
In recent countries, we have observed a new political divide. We do not any longer see as the most important cleavage left or right. It is still there and very important in politics. But in the face of globalization, we've also seen the emerge of a new axis on the political compass. It's called different things, but it could be simplified as open versus closed. Because the turn of the century, we saw the financial crisis, the Great Recession, migrant crisis, and some pointed to globalization as the cause of these challenges. And as a result, we saw many important political shifts. Brexit, the US election, the French political elections, we might see it in Italy now as well. And these political fights are partially or fully fought along the lines of open versus closed. It is an understandable reaction in many ways. We live in a complex world. This is intimidating. Globalization is happening, and not everybody is a winner in that globalization. The world is interconnected in an unprecedented way, in Europe in particular, where a car can be built with a German design, in a Mexican factory with an American chassis and an Australian engine.
We had a very quick chat before the Commissioner jumped on a plane to New Zealand.
Saw you on a golf buggy yesterday with the Governor-General chasing kangaroos. What did you make of your first Australian experience chasing kangaroos in Canberra?
Well, we were not really chasing them. We were looking at it. We had discussed a very serious matter with the Governor-General before on the free trade agreement that we launched politically the negotiations yesterday. And he was very informed and he put a lot of questions. But then he wanted to show some of the kangaroos in his garden, which is, of course, a wonderful bonus being here for the first time in Australia.
How important is it that Australia and the European Union finally agree the terms of this deal, particularly given what we're seeing in terms of protectionism in the United States, China not living up to its responsibilities as a global superpower and trade partner?
Well, it is important, of course. We've been discussing this for quite some time. I think we are well prepared, and it would be important economically, opening up new possibilities for our small and medium-sized companies to respective markets, etc., facilitating trade. But it's also, as you say, it's a sort of political, strategic agreement as well, because both Australia and the European Union, we stand up for global rule-based trade, for multilateralism, for fair, transparent rules. And those of us who believe in that, we need to stand up right now, because we know that both in Australia but also in the European Union, small and medium-sized businesses are the backbone of our economy, and they don't have the resources to fill in forms and to look for the recent rules and what's actually in the trade agreement. So we will try to facilitate for them by having a specific chapter looking at their needs, setting up contact points, special websites, so that they can take advantages as companies here of our respective markets and also grow there.
We've been hearing lots of very European words the last 24 hours. Gorgonzola, Parma, Camembert, Burgundy, Champagne. How important are geographical indicators, and how flexible is the European Union in terms of perhaps relinquishing some of those, and how important are they to your member states?
Well, they are very important. They're a big economic importance for many member states, guaranteeing the quality and the product, that people really know that they are buying the real thing. And I think it can be important for Australia as well, not only in the wine sector, but you have many fantastic products that could maybe be branded as geographical indication, and it will give you the quality stamp as well. I don't know, Tasmanian whiskey or Tasmanian lobster I heard today could potentially be such candidates. It is important for us. There would be a few names where we have difficulties, but we'll find a way to solve that.
a deal could be done potentially very, very quickly. A good deal, that's a priority for both nations, but you've been here, you've spoken to them, you've been to Parliament. How encouraged are you by what you've heard?
Well, I'm very encouraged by the very strong support of the government, the Prime Minister, but I understand this is also something that has bipartisan support, and that is, of course, important. So we are encouraged, we are well prepared, we know what we want to do, we have worked together before, we have experienced negotiating teams, so we will get this done. It has to be a good deal, because of course it has to be approved by our respective parliaments and so on, but we have our first real negotiation round already first days of July, so we're kicking off here, and we will move as speedily as we can, but of course the content is the most important.
EU Trade Commissioner Cecilia Malmström there. And this week, we also pause to mark World Refugee Day. It's hard to believe, but there are currently 25.4 million people who have fled their homes because of war, violence and persecution. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull and Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton leading a gathering in the Mural Hall of Parliament.
It's wonderful to be here to mark Refugee Week 2018. Australia would be a very different nation and a poorer one were it not for the contribution of refugees over so many years. All of us benefit here in this, the most successful multicultural society in the world, from the contribution of every new generation of refugees that arrive on our shores. And during this week, we reflect on your courage, your enterprise, and your strength, and your sacrifice. Our offshore intake last financial year was the biggest for three decades, more than 20,000 visas granted. But the important thing is that we decide who comes in on our humanitarian and refugee programs. And the reason Australians support our refugee and humanitarian programs is because they know that their government, which they elect and which is accountable to them, determines who comes here, and we do not outsource our refugee program, our migration program, the integrity of our borders to people smugglers. Our strong border protection policy is the foundation, the security, which enables us to be consistently one of the world's most generous countries in terms of resettling refugees.
Over 880,000 people have arrived through the humanitarian program since the Second World War, including 55,000 just in the last 3 years alone. And with 20,200 offshore visas granted, that is the highest number since the 1980s, and it is something I think that all Australians should be very proud of.
In a place full of bluff and bluster, it was deeply moving to hear refugees share their personal stories. New Australians like Ashud Palulian.
I could have never imagined that one day I will be standing right here and doing my speech in front of all of you. My family and I spent years seeking refuge in three different countries. Those years were the hardest time of our lives. Once you are forced to leave your homeland and become a refugee, I think something breaks inside of you. It's not easy. Australia, you gave me a chance to live a normal life all over again and to make my dreams a reality. You gave me more than I dreamed of in my darkest days, but most importantly, you gave my family safety, which we lost in our home country. From the first day I arrived in Australia, I felt that I was home. My family and I were welcome, and the Australian government supported us in more ways than we could imagine. My worry was the language and how I was going to find a job. I knew what I wanted to do, but I didn't know how and where to start until SSI helped me. They gave me a case manager who helped us settle and also guided me to the Ignite program. Ignite program is an amazing initiative. Ignite team helped me step by step to start my own business, doing what I love most, tennis coaching. As a tennis player before and coach now, I take my love like a match. You must fight for every point. If you lose the point, you must try again. So I tried again to stand on my feet. I worked hard, and in a very short time, I have my own business. My business called Shooting Star Tennis Coaching. Ignite even contacted me with Tennis Australia. This time last year, I was in Canberra doing a tennis coaching course where I got my certificate despite my English not being perfect. But where there is a will, there's a way. I was determined to achieve my goal, and with the support of the Ignite program and Tennis Australia, my dream became reality. Now that I have my qualification and I started my business, I decided I wanted to give back to the community. I start a refugee program where I give free lessons to newly arrived refugees, adults and kids, so they can mix with their new environment. I want to inspire them and show them that if you learn the language and you adapt to your new life, possibilities are endless. And I feel that my program can help them to come out of their shell and build their confidence. With my experience, I want to be a role model to other newcomers to believe in their dreams and abilities, and show them that Australia is a land of big opportunities, and that together we can build strong and better communities. Thank you.
We'll leave you this week with this performance from Syrian refugees Clara, Jacques, Raja and Habib, which visibly moved a Prime Minister and so many more of us who stood to sing the national anthem in our national parliament. Have a great weekend.
We are one, but we are many, and from all the lands on earth we come. We share a dream and sing with one voice. I am, you are, we are Australians. The first time my husband introduced me to this song, I actually cried. I was overwhelmed with how much this song felt, gave me the feeling that I'm accepted. How much humanity this country has. We've arrived to Australia exactly 1,376 days ago, and we are proud that we are applying for our citizenship in exactly 85 days. And this is why we were preparing the national anthem. It was actually my dad's idea since the beginning of the year to feel the belonging to and express our belonging to our new country, Australia. Hope you like it.
Australia, let us rejoice, for we are young and free. With all the soil and worth for blood, our home is girt by sea. Our land and our dear nature give of beauty.
SBS acknowledges the Ngunnawal people who are the traditional custodians of the land on which the Australian Parliament sits and where this program was recorded. We pay respect to the elders of the Ngunnawal Nation, both past and present.
Tell us what you think. Rate this podcast on iTunes. It helps other people to find us.